Hi, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Hard Truth with myself, David Vance, and Alana Mercer. Hi, Alana.
Hi, David. Good to see you.
Yes, it's great to see you as well. We had a little break last week, and here we are back with a vengeance, so to speak. And as always, Alana, so much stuff happens, you know, so much in this big, crazy world we live in. Couple of weeks goes by and so many things have happened, but we've tried to, I think we've got a number of stuff we want to try and talk about this evening. So we'll try and get through that, folks. Hope you'll all enjoy it. As always, if you do enjoy this, please like it. Please subscribe to the channel, whether you're watching this on Rumble or any of the video channels, or if you're listening to it on the podcast channel, whichever way it is, do make sure you hit the likes, hit the subscribes, and send us rumbles. We devour rumbles for Christmas.
Yes, and we have a channel on Rumble, which is doing quite nicely.
Yes, and we have.
Good to be away from Taliban Tube, because we can't rely on having a video up there and saying something out of kilter and then having us, as you say, in the doghouse for weeks. So Rumble is working nicely.
That's so true. I mean, look, the whole point about this channel and the people I think that listen to us and watch us is they want to hear honest conversations, and they want to hear people say, without fear of censorship. And Taliban Tube it's just impossible. So it's great to have Rumble. It's great to have these other platforms. And I think in the next sort of 12 months, we'll have even more of them, Alana. So, you know, we don't have to worry about holding back or not saying the unspeakable thing. And actually, that's what we're going to start off about. We're going to talk about the unspeakable thing for that YouTube doesn't like, because if you talk or if you question the so-called vaccines on YouTube, you are in trouble, Alana Mercer. You'd be in big trouble. But here we can say what we want. So just to kick off with, as you know, Alana, this is an interesting story. It's a little bit, it happened last week, it happened, but it's worth kicking off with, because our good friends at the FDA went to court to get, if we can bring it up, the imagery here, that they wanted to get an injunction on the release of all the information behind the fight that allowed them to declare that the Pfizer jab is super duper safe.
100%. David, can I just interject? I don't think we have good friends at the FDA. This was not the FDA. So a bunch of scientists, as far as I can understand, the news snippet that appeared on Reuters, how surprising is that, was that about 50 scientists from Harvard, Yale, Brown University, initiated a Freedom of Information action at the FDA. About the Pfizer data upon which the FDA relied to approve the Pfizer mRNA jab, clot shot, as some people are referring to it as. And this is you tell us about the reaction, because I likened it to yes, Prime Minister, yes, yes, Minister, the most brilliant anti-state, or at least brilliant British satire depicting the state in a way that absolutely tickles you pink. So basically, Humphrey said to the Prime Minister, so Humphrey, the bureaucrat, the uber bureaucrat, said, well, you know, we have a bunch of people that, Minister, it's so inconvenient. They want the data upon which we relied to give 100 million people the Pfizer shot, the Pfizer vaccine, the COVID vaccine. It's so inconvenient. Have you seen the data, Minister says to Sir Humphrey. And Sir Humphrey says, oh, no, Minister, we don't have to do that. You know, let's look at a way of how would one say classifying the information, but we won't put it in those words. Let's classify the information. What we do is the law puts no limit on the number of years that we can within which we can release the information. How about 55 years in the year 276, Minister? Oh, that will be fine, Humphrey. But make it subtle, Humphrey, because I did run on transparency. So I don't do justice to that most brilliant satire, but I think that is for real. That is for real.
It is for real. What they wish to do, I think, is to release, I think there's something like 375,000 pages of data, and they're going to release 300 pages or whatever it is, a week or a month or whatever, so that it'll take 55 years, by which point I fear some of us, particularly me, may no longer walk this earth. My goat mind, though. That's when we'll know what's in the jab that they've been lacing half the world with. So that reassured me tremendously, Alana. You must have felt really relieved at that.
Well, I mean, it didn't make the news. I think Tucker Carlson will eventually arrive at this, because I'm sure his producers look at the dissident community and the social media community for their stories, no doubt. So they'll eventually do something about it. Diana West, great journalist, did great. We should have her on. Certainly, we should have her on. And I'm sure the Robert Kennedy is speaking about it. And no doubt Naomi Wolf would have been quite aware of all this. But this is briefly mentioned on Reuters, and Reuters was quite annoyed. And to their credit, they did no follow-ups though. But no, this is a way of what was the expression I used? Classifying information whereby the government, for instance, we still haven't seen certain events in history, including the Kennedy assassination. I believe that's classified. So government will classify, and it's up to the people to keep reminding government to release the information. And there is a classification, a date whereby classification expires. And this is just a different way of classifying it. As you said, drip, drip of information. You get so many pages, but to get the big picture, you really need all the data. And what is amazing is that I'm not clear if the FDA even saw this data. I suspect not.
Yeah, well, the Operation Warp Speed or whatever it was, lots of big questions.
Some of it Trump's fault, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we need to be, I agree, completely right. But I'll tell you what, never mind Pfizer's desperation to cover up whatever is in their clot shot, but Austria. Now, when you and I started talking about the Austrian situation, and by the way, I did love your tweet about Austria, but at that point, it looked like, oh yeah, they're going to go for a lockdown of the unvaccinated, because they did say that. And then, Alana, and this is a remarkable thing, they went from locking down the unvaccinated to, yeah, we're going to lock down everybody. It's a complete lockdown. So full national lockdown. And then, and this is the really sinister thing, and really interested in getting your thoughts on this, they want to bring in mandatory vaccinations for those who have thus far refused it, which comes to about slightly under 2 million Austrians. I had an Austrian on my show last week, one of my streams, Alana, and there's a sense of horror amongst the minority in Austria that this is what's being proposed, and yet it is. So thoughts, Alana, on Austria?
Well, I think we should actually start from the fact that the unvaccinated have been locked down. I think it's fair to say that the people who've gone along, some of them sheeple, some of them have to eat, right? They have to eat. They have to go about the business of life. Those people had to get the vaccination. But it's fair to say that lockdown on the vaccinated will be lifted. But what we're seeing in Austria and Australia is an absolute persecution of, and Germany might follow suit, persecution of the unvaccinated. And I'm, as much as I hate the black experience, as I put it, people who were not slaves, whose ancestors were slaves, are boiling the bones of their ancestors to make soup, to extract the much sympathy and political advantage from past suffering, which they didn't know of. So I'm against reminding fascistic entities like Austria or Germany of the past, because I don't believe in, as a libertarian, I don't believe in collective guilt. Guilt is attaches to the individual. But I will happily remind the Austrian government, and if Germany follows suits, of their close collaboration with Hitler, the Anschluss, I think it was called, the collaboration and the capitulation to Hitler, and the virulent anti-Semitism. And I think it is absolutely apropos to bring it up, especially with respect. And Naomi Wolf, actually, she's an activist, mentioned the history of these two countries. It's despicable. And so I think the emphasis should be, as literally the unvaccinated are the new Jews, with the star, the Star of David, the yellow Star of David next, to designate us as unvaccinated. It's horrifying.
Yeah, you know, and actually, although that was Austria and Germany and all those things, I second everything you say. I agree with that. Interestingly enough, I saw a senator speak in the Irish Parliament yesterday, and Ireland's very, very far gone in this as well. And this senator was suggesting that the unvaccinated should indeed be banned from supermarkets. So what? So he wants us to starve to death. Is that where we are? That's Dublin yesterday. So it's pretty shocking, Alana, the stuff that's being spoken about. I mean, we don't need to always, as you say, reference the past, although there again, we should be conscious of the things that have happened. And
but that's the free world. In the free world, I mean, and Australia, are they locking down the entire population? The unvaccinated are locked down, aren't they? We're not quite sure on the details there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Australia's really grim. Australia, in the past couple of days, have been boasting about the fact that in the Northern Territories, you know, the northernmost, actually least populated part of Australia, where there are quite a few Aboriginal populations, what they've been told is that if they don't get the jab, they're going to be trucked off by the military into detention camps. So again, not, you know, history and all of that there. So they're sending minority groups to camps in the Northern Territories of Australia. Where's the Liberals in this one, Alana? You know, where are they? It's you and me protesting against these things. Where are the so-called liberal human rights sirens?
The liberalism of the 60s, the anti-war liberals, with whom I as a libertarian would have much in common, that they are dead. That's gone. They are pro-war, pro-intervention, pro-agitating against Russia, and you know, that liberalism is classical liberalism, which is tenets we shared with the left. Yeah. They've absolutely opted, theoretically, for tyranny in the name of power and wokeness.
But I'll tell you what's interesting though, and on a positive note, I wanted to talk to you about. I myself was out at a protest outside Belfast City Hall. I think we do have a picture or two. If we may be able to share the pictures of them. Yes, if you want to bring one of them up, Jed. I was out at this thing anyway, regardless of pictures. I was out on Saturday with a bunch of several thousand people, and we were essentially marking World Freedom Day, which was another way for saying we oppose the COVID passports, the mandatory vaccinations, the tyranny. And you know what was great, Alana? There were people across the political spectrum. It wasn't right. It wasn't all right, it wasn't all left. It was people who were sort of seeing the big picture, as in, hey, this is our freedom, and you're not taking our freedom, and you're not going to force us to show our papers to go in, you know, to have a coffee or to go into the shops or to go to a restaurant or whatever.
Were there any young people? That's important. Because
no,
I find Loads. Oh, good, good. Loads.
In fact, I think we maybe have pictures now, if we can show them, Alana. One of which I took. They were from my own camera, from my own. Yeah.
Yes.
So you can see on the left-hand side, that was the big building in the background is the City Hall. This was the crowd. And you see here on the right-hand side, and there were, I was chatting to young people and whatnot. They recognized me from my relentless activity here on the internet, on the interzones, and they recognized me. And so I was talking to them all, you know, and what was great to see this sea of humanity.
Oh, yeah, it goes way back.
It goes, the photograph does not do justice. It goes way back. It goes right the way down. It was a sea of, you couldn't have captured all those people, Alana, in a single photo, because there's just too many of them. So that was quite good, and it was really cheering to see that you could stand with, as you say, sort of liberal-minded people, or not maybe people necessarily that would align with us on all the issues, but on this they did. On this they're absolutely clear. They're woke. They see this tyranny for what it is. And I was talking to nurses, I was talking to professional people, I was talking to young people, and it was very, I think we need this. We need to, because if for no other reason, it keeps you sane, because you realize you're not on your own.
Yes, and there's something about not the lack of coverage. I don't know if the BBC News covers this, but there's nothing on the networks here, except a little bit on Fox News. But Fox is mainly opinion, often unwelcome opinion, and so news broadcasts are far and few between. So, no, I think it would do so much to strengthen the correct dissident community standing up for liberties, for individual rights, for constitutional rights, to see that there is a mass uprising.
Actually, the point about lack of media coverage is a great point, Alana, because there was a huge demos in places as far as way as London, saw a massive demo. Rome, huge crowd in Rome, crowds in Austria, in Vienna, crowds in different parts of Germany. You know, it was across the world. But one of the reasons we have this channel of ours, Alana, is, again, The mainstream media just turn away. They turn away from from covering these events. They're deliberately...
Yes, and from questioning. I mean, journalistically, I was just going to ask you, look, they might have some sort of case if they can show that the people... First of all, we don't know about mortality. You sent me stats about an island, Gibraltar, which is a perfectly... Yes. A perfect case study, really, because an island is relatively closed. You monitor who comes and goes. 118% vaccinated. Yep. And of course, so yes, we have flu every year, but they're not the important number is mortality. We're not having, and we don't know, and nobody's asking, because we have cretins for journalists. They are not asking whether for proof. It used to be you needed two sources to verify that those who land up in hospital in the intensive care units are unvaccinated indeed, as well as are they on the extreme, bell curve in terms of risk groups, morbidities, weight, and so on and so forth. So when we don't have that information, we don't have mortality. And I suspect Australia too, and Europe. Oh, I mean, do they have how many cases they have a day is not the issue. The issue, what is the mortality?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll just jump back to Australia for a second. If you check out the Northern Territories, where they are literally trucking Aborigines to get them jabbed, the precise number of deaths from COVID is zero.
Really?
Yeah, the correct number of deaths from being eaten by a crocodile is 35 over the past 5 years. So there's more people, Alana, in the northern territories of Australia eaten by crocodiles. Nobody's died of COVID. But back to Gibraltar, because I'm really glad you're
reminded. By the way, Australia also should be reminded of its oppression of the Aborigines, or they're decimating their culture and their land and what have you, when they do this, because clearly they are targeting this minority. Yes. And just as we remind our friends the Austrians of their torrid past, you know, the Hitlerian
yes, that was a great
contact, term. Especially towards Jews, we should remind the Australians about the Aborigine, ethnic cleansing. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I travelled across Australia, and it's sad to see the state into which the Aboriginal people have fallen. I mean, it's not nice. It's horrible to see.
And isn't it interesting that just like our First Nations, Native Americans, they have no concept of using power aggressively like our African American community. They don't have. When I studied political science, we used it was before political correctness. We used the concept an extractive view of politics, and our lecturers openly at UNISA, my alma mater, pointed out that certain people do have an extractive view of politics and how to get in there and use it. And the Aborigines, not to take you away from a point, don't seem to have that voice as the Native Americans neither. So that's pretty sad.
But absolutely agree. But on Gibraltar is a fascinating petri dish, because I've not been to Gibraltar, but I've got friends live in Gibraltar. It's a small community, and they have jabbed 118%, because there are people who travel across the border daily from Spain into Gibraltar. That's why it's plus 100%. So you can't. This is Dr. Anthony Fauci's dream. 100%. Everybody's jab. What's happened? What's happened is the cases have gone like that, and the deaths have gone like that. It's just straight upwards. And so they're in a lockdown. Essentially, Christmas is cancelled in Gibraltar. But they've all been double jabbed. Now, Alana, it seems a bit strange to me that if you've achieved the nirvana of 100%, why are you still locking people down? Why are cases still rising?
And you say that mortality is rising as well. Yeah. Of course, if you have more cases, you're going to have more mortality Well, we have to. Nobody's asking the questions. And if you do ask the questions, you're called an anti-vaxxer. I'm not an anti-vaxxer. As an immigrant, I had to have so many vaccinations to come into this country, all of them, of an older, older vaccination. Yes, well, studies have recently, I've said on our broadcast, Hard Truth, I've recently had shingles. I don't want to have shingles. I looked at it, had a decade of data behind it, was well studied, non-toxic vaccine. So we're not allowed to ask these questions. Why are well-vaccinated people, is it only the unvaccinated? No, it can't be. You say that 118% are vaccinated. So this is a plague among the vaccinated.
Absolutely.
Can we question the vaccine, David?
Well, I've not seen this discussed on one mainstream media channel anywhere. And yet, even anyone with a modicum of scientific curiosity would ask that simple question that you've just asked, Alana. If we vaccinated everybody, how can we be having even greater levels of death and so-called infection? How can this be? Because it doesn't make sense. Unless, of course, the vaccines, maybe that explains why Pfizer aren't so keen to let us know, Alana, what's exactly in their vaccine.
Oh, David. Yeah. Sir Humphrey has to correct you. Oh, they're very keen, Prime Minister.
Yeah.
All in the course of time.
Just wait 55 years, David, and it's going to be, we're going to let you know then. That's if how many people have survived it by then. So, yeah, so that was, so look, these COVID times are, it's mad. It's disconcerting. It is worrying because there's historical echoes we can see. And I, again, actually, it was quite sad. At that, going back to the Belfast thing, just for a sec, there were actually people wearing yellow stars.
I saw that. Touching.
You know, and you know, so yeah, it's and but that's because those people are scared. They fear that they may be heading somewhere that they don't want to go. And we've seen from history, and not just in the 30s and 40s, but throughout the broader sweep of history, Alana, we know what tyrants can do, and we have to stand up to them. But anyway, that's...
Yes, but who imagined that we live under tyranny? Yes, we live under a cumbersome administrative state that manages every nook and cranny of our lives. James Burnham talked about the managerial state. I contend the deep state is a version of what he spoke of. We people who are educated about the state know the state controls at least 50% of the national product once you factor in unfunded liabilities and everything and so on. We know all these things, but did we think the administrative state, yes, it manages to the point of petty tyranny our lives, but would it jump to obliterate your unwritten constitution in England? Does Ireland have a constitution?
It does. And it's completely
so it does with the Bill of Rights?
Yeah, Ireland has, yes, indeed it has. And that is just ripped up, and we have to keep going with whatever the World Health Organization says. But at least, as I say, at least we can talk about these things. And I hope the people who watch and listen to us, Alana, you know, do understand that we're just trying to get to the hard truths of what's going on a weekly basis out there in the world, wherever it is, and we're trying to keep on top of it. But not, as I say, I'm conscious of time, so I didn't want to sort of let the other thing that's happened since we spoke last is obviously the Rittenhouse trial. Kyle Rittenhouse was found innocent. The left had is still having a collective hissy fit about that. So that's been amusing to watch. And I watched him with interest on Cart with Tucker Carlson. I watched.
What did you think?
I mean, he spoke well, didn't he? I mean, he's this 18-year-old kid. So I don't think I could have spoken that well at 18. What do you think?
I thought he did really well. I think he's sort of assimilating some of the talking points of the handlers. I like the more spontaneous child, but that's me. I just wouldn't like to see him become more of a political pawn than he has been. But certainly, when a child's 19 says this was the correct decision, the jury, you know, he's pretty much channeling the handlers. And
I think he is.
A very nice man, and as my husband was pointing out, he wants to be a nurse. This is a guy, a natural rescuer. He was there to do good. He acted extremely his instincts were very, very good. I mean, I would want a police force that can do that sort of job, or at least a private to be able to, since our police force no longer works. Yeah. To be able to hire private security, he's certainly got a career in that. But he wants to become a nurse, and I just hope that he can get justice from the media that maligned him, maybe even from the president that trashed him.
Yeah, I hope his legal team go after the president and the vice president, both who maligned him and defamed him. And in fact, actually, he's been defamed quite a bit over here in the UK since the trial, because all the feral lefties.
I saw a disgusting segment of the BBC. Yep. Of all, they usually report things quite well, and BBC International isn't that unobjective, but it was a horribly skewed piece, shameful.
But then the thing is, and this is what I want to kind of get us into the main piece here. So we had the Rittenhouse thing, and then when you thought, well, maybe things are going to calm down, we of course saw the horrendous killing of, I believe, six people, and the injuring of at least 40, 45, whatever, in the town of, I think it's Waukesha, but if I pronounce it wrong, I'm sure someone will tell me. That was absolutely horrific, because, again, social media is such a strange thing, Alana. You know, it's good and it's bad, but I almost instantly started to see the video footage of the red SUV sweeping up, this horrendous footage. And that brings us to our friend, the alleged killer. And I think we've got him on screen here, if we can bring him up. Daryl Brooks, fine looking specimen of something. And and actually, funny enough, Alana, don't know if you saw, but in some of the media, I think it was CNN, somebody basically showed an image of him, and then he'd been overexposed in the light. So it's almost like he was a white man. I bet you they were praying this was a white supremacist attack. Of course it wasn't. It was more of the same. What's your thoughts on what the media called rapper Daryl Brooks? What's your thoughts?
Well, I had a column last week speaking about this habitual inability, very disappointing in the conservative media to acknowledge a theme in my work ever since publication of Into the Cannibal Spot in 2011 is black on white hate crimes and them being invariably not reported, underreported, or if reported, masked as something other than systemic anti-whiteness and hate. And of course, this is of a piece with that sort of occurrence. And, you know, people like Colm Flaherty, they document this painstakingly, journalistically, not like I would do with an overlay of analytical comments, but he just brings you the facts, the brutal facts. As we speak, there are beatings of whites on trains, targeting, and you just have a feral mob that has been empowered and unleashed and told that to act on any slightest offense, and usually it's envy, plain and simple. The slightest offense is just to climb into the target of their abstracted, very real hatred, but the targets are abstracted, the white man. And you sent me a predictably distressing Candace Owens comment. Yeah. Instructing us in the Yankee mold, the Northern Yankee mold, this is not about race. And if you are among a minority, a select minority who speaks the truth, the hard truth, and says that this is about race, you have been brainwashed. So the minority of us has been brainwashed. Interesting, right?
Well, this is the tweet that I did send you, Alana. And as you can see, Candace is telling us that Daryl Brooks is a scumbag murderer. His race is irrelevant. Joseph Rosenbaum should burn in hell for anally raping children. His race is irrelevant. And ditto George Floyd. I have to say...
George Floyd, doesn't belong here. The two others... it's hard to... She just pieces things together without any sort of thread. What do you think here?
Well, I mean, what I think is what I said to you earlier. I think she's trying to brainwash us. I would just gently suggest that, you know, she's ruling out any connection whatsoever to the background of the, in one case, the alleged murderer, he was the convicted child pedophile. Why shouldn't we look into all these things? Maybe there is an issue. Maybe we should be looking there. Or is that just too controversial?
Well, no, I think she's decontextualizing it entirely. Yes. And in fact, this is about race.
It is.
And in fact, maybe we are incorrect in saying that Kyle Rittenhouse, the whole occurrence there, yeah, they were all white people, but the broader context was racial. Riots were racial. Kyle was there to maintain law and order and to guard property. But the gentleman that she points out, a hideous man, that Rosenbaum, Kyle let it be said, took out the trash. Yeah, a lot of dumpsters there, but the only one man took out the trash. Dumpsters are light. But the gentleman, the Rosenbaum gentleman, was there because of race. He was there to protest white systemic racism, brutality, et cetera, et cetera. And Who was the other man? That Daryl, certainly he plows after the Rittenhouse. He has a his look. This is a black on white crime, and now you can call it.
Yeah.
You can excuse it as something other than race based, but I think we have critical mass data.
To suggest
that it is racially, but what you know, her motivation is just more obfuscation. You know, it's the moral high ground. I can still make my way into polite company if I look. I sympathize with Candace Owen. I myself, as a libertarian, you know, I have the individualist disdain for race as an organizing principle. And of course, I say that you have to. We spoke about this when we spoke about Charles Murray's latest book, which also echoed the theme that I expressed in there's nothing racial about stating aggregate truths based upon critical mass data. This is the basis of social science and the hard sciences. Aggregate truths. There are outliers, of course, and this is why we say you treat each and every human being as an individual. You never make broad statements about an individual you're interacting with based on color. But can you not concede that our society, the American society now, is organized around systemic anti-whiteness? She's instructing us against that. I doubt Michelle Malkin would ever say something as foolish as that. She is Tucker Carlson's go-to person on racial matters.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's the role, the stereotype that she's happy to fill. But back to this guy, Daryl Brooks. It's emerged, Alana, in the past number of hours, I believe, that a series of social media posts by this guy have come to light, in which he specifically stated that it's time to go out and kill white people. So I'm sorry, Candace Owen. Again, Alana and I, we're not generalizing, but we're absolutely nailing this one. In this case, you have to judge the person by their own words and actions. And so the words and actions are very, very clear. This was racially motivated mass murder. And we have to call it out. And we mustn't sanitize it, lest it hurts certain people's feelings. I don't care about people's feelings. I care about the next of kin, by the way, of all those kids and you know, families affected by his actions, his murderous actions. And yet, you know, as you say, again, it's like so much of the things we're trying to talk about. We're trying to talk about the media's wanting to sanitize them or reconfigure them so it's not going to hurt anyone's feelings.
Yeah, and conservatives are certainly complicit. You know, as I mentioned, the last column I wrote was certainly full of incidents in which conservatives don't seem to be able to articulate white tragedy, white sorrow, white victimization without reference to the black experience. And then you had someone like Dana Loesch speaking about the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict and saying that, it wasn't enough for her to speak about this boy who was in such distress looking at a life sentence in jail. She had to bring in black businesses. Oh, black businesses were suffering. Black businesses were suffering. And this is just a rule. J.D. Vance, there was a conference of so-called national conservatism, many of whom have recently discovered populism and national conservatism.
Yeah.
Certainly all the dissident community being barred from that. J.D. Vance, who's, I hope he pans out. I don't want to come down on him. I must stop coming down on him so hard. But he said, it is as horrible to have told a young girl in 1965 that she has certain characteristics based on her black skin as it is to tell, say, a young white girl in 2021 that she's innately evil because of the color of her skin. But that's the thing. We are living through anti-whiteness. our society is systemically anti-white. This is not 1965, is the point I'm making in that particular column. You know, this is not 2021, and this is a time where but they just have to bring in the black experience to justify saying that it is wrong to victimize whites, even though they won't say that whites, qua whites, as whites, are being victimized.
Yeah, and again, just to wrap on, but it actually just concludes the point you make pretty nicely. I did send you this. I don't think we can show it, but it's a story I saw whereby we've got the Salvation Army. Salvation Army, Alana, as well as they're looking your money, they want white donors to offer a sincere apology for their racism. Salvation Army, who have embraced critical race theory, oh, what a surprise, and they now want white donors to apologize. Sorry, no way. They're not going to. So I like the Salvation Army music, but I wouldn't give them a penny. What about you?
Absolutely not. I hope their coffers are as empty as their heads.
Yeah. Well, actually, Alana, on that note, on that positive note, telling it like it is, we will bring to our proceedings to a conclusion. But listen, Alana, thank you so much. It's great to get back with you again.
Thank you, David. Wonderful talking to you.
The time has flown in and we've only just started, but we bring it to a conclusion. Want to thank everybody. If you do enjoy this, give us a rumble, give us a like, give us a subscribe. Wherever it is, give us your support. We need it to keep on going, to keep on trying to identify these hard truths and put them out there. And again, thank you all so much. Alana and myself really appreciate it. So bye from both of us.
Until next week.
Good night.